Welcome back to Sundial. I'm Katie Switalski, guest hosting for Luis Hernandez. If you've been living in South Florida for long enough, you know how expensive housing is here. The lack of available affordable housing here has been a point of focus for politicians and researchers. Last year, the city of Miami passed an inclusionary zoning measure for the Omni housing development downtown. It would require a portion of the apartments in those developments to be made affordable. The city's also launched an affordable housing master plan and has been seeking input from residents. But lawmakers in Tallahassee have different ideas in mind. New legislation moving forward would prevent cities from requiring that affordable housing is part of new developments. Miami City Commissioner Ken Russell spearheaded the Omni Inclusionary Zoning Project and is following the bill in Tallahassee closely. He joins us now in studio. Welcome, Commissioner Russell.
Thanks for having me.
And later on, he'll update us on plans for the Coconut Grove Playhouse and explain why you've been seeing so many electric scooters downtown. Commissioner, let's start first with what's your understanding of the legislation that's currently in Tallahassee? How are the commissioners expecting it to impact the city of Miami's ability to create affordable housing zones?
Well, it's very fluid. It's happening as we speak in Tallahassee right now. They're in the last days of session, and this is one of the issues they're taking up. Both the Senate and the House have different versions of this, but both tend to want to preempt a local government's ability to address this housing issue on a mandatory basis.
And, you know, can you explain a little bit what the Omni housing development that you spearheaded last year was and how it's going to work?
Sure. So the city has purview to make changes to our zoning code. And the elected officials in the city, the commissioners, are able to do that. What's never been done before in the history of Miami or the state is mandatory inclusionary affordability. And the concept is that we give significant entitlements to development, and in exchange, they give a certain portion of workforce or affordable housing within that development. And it's a partnership. What the state is concerned is they feel there's a mandate coming down, and there have been bad examples of inclusionary zoning around the country. But I studied this legislation throughout different examples, and we found what works and what doesn't. And what we've done here in Miami is what's working. So we're hoping that the good intentions of Tallahassee don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
And so if you could define for me, what is affordable housing in this case? What's the percentage of income that people would be paying that makes these apartments affordable in these zones?
Sure. This is at the higher end of affordability, which is called workforce housing. And so these are young professionals, the workforce of the community. This is not the extremely low income, but it could be. Inclusionary zoning could reach into any one of those levels of the spectrum of affordable housing. In this case, we are targeting the core of downtown, where it's very hard for a young professional to find any place to live that's within their price bracket. So they end up having to live far outside of town and commute and add to our whole traffic problem. So the idea that you could live in the core where you work is a big plus to quality of life, traffic, you name it. And so that's the concept. We're looking at, in this case, up to 140% of AMI, which is the average median income. And so you're going to have apartments just over $1,000 in an area where they could be nearly $2,000. And so that is affordable relative to what's there now, but it's nowhere. It's just scratching the surface of what we need to do for the city as a whole. So for us to have just put our foot in the door on a concept and to see that we might lose that potential path is troubling.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the master plan that the city's been developing. You actually met with residents last month. What were the focus of those discussions? What ideas came out of that? Did it relate to some of this affordability and percentage?
Absolutely. And no matter how much we do, what we learn is we're not doing enough, because affordability is such a crisis in the city of Miami. We are actually one of the first things we learned out of this study, which is being put together by the Metropolitan Center at FIU, is that city of Miami is number one in being the absolute worst city in the country when it comes to how much of people's income is spent on their housing. And so we have nearly 70% of our residents paying over 30% of their income on their housing. And the next number two city is, 10% below us. So, we are an anomaly. We are an outlier on this situation, and we have a crisis. So everyone's concerned. The residents are coming at this not only from rental, but from ownership. From a perspective of those just coming out of homelessness and getting their first key, to those who have a college degree but can't live in town.
And we actually did speak with a researcher on WLRN Sundial recently about, this exact issue that you're talking about. And I'm curious, sort of going back to what's going on in Tallahassee, you know, how do you respond to the argument that establishing a cost ceiling for housing development will ultimately reduce incentives for development in available housing units?
If done in a vacuum, that could be a negative consequence. If you just try to get the world of development to solve your housing crisis, it's not going to happen. If you leave it to them voluntarily, they're not going to do it. You've got your traditional housing developers that play in that game, and they know how to get the federal incentives that are out there. We're trying to think outside the box and use the municipal tools to bring otherwise market rate developers into this world of affordability. Now, they may do it kicking and screaming at first, but once they recognize the incentive package we're putting together and that the end product actually organically works for them, that they can get financing, that people do rent out, and that's what's happening in this area where we've done the inclusionary zoning, it's a complete success. And we've got new developers that are getting involved, and they're having success. So it works.
Well, for the developer that's concerned, can I make money if I'm offering an apartment at an affordable rate to an area? What are some of these incentives?
So when a developer buys land in the city of Miami, they land bank it, and they either try to wait for the market to be right, or they seek an entitlement or an upzoning that'll give them additional capacity or density. In some parts of the city, that's okay. We have the capacity and the space. They're on public transit. It's in the core of the city, and we have the room. Now, the particular area that we rezoned for this, it's called T624, and that's a technical term. You called it the Omni area, which is accurate. This is the area of downtown that's west of the Arsht Center, east of Overtown, and just north of I-395. So there's a whole area of blighted land that's undeveloped, and people have been sitting on for years and not pulling the trigger on.
It's right next to the studios we're sitting in.
We are actually in this area, and there's three new towers that have come up in this area that are using this zoning code already successfully. And so the ceiling, the incentive is basically the additional zoning intensity that they received to be able to build additional floors so that financially they're not subsidizing the affordability. They're getting an incentive package that the affordability is a small ask to make out of that.
Oh, I'm curious, have you been able to have these conversations about your concerns with the bill, with the bill's sponsor, Jacksonville Republican Jason Fisher, you know, and been able to express these to him?
So I've been reaching out to allies in Tallahassee. This isn't just an argument about preemption. There are many issues where the cities all throughout the state have an issue where we don't feel that the state should be weighing in on some of the local rules. And some of those we may never have success on, but we're seeing a lot of those when it comes to plastic bans.
Plastic straws.
We're preempted from living wage, changing the minimum wage. There's a lot of things like that. But in this particular case where it's actually within our purview to change the zoning of the city, if we do it in a well thought out way, it can be very positive. And so their fear is of the negative consequence of doing it wrong. But what we'd like to show them, there's already a positive example of this happening. So let's hit the brakes and let's work on this together for next session. Because if there are types of mandates that you don't want to see that make sense, I'd even support that. But to say, let's throw all mandates out the door, if left to its own devices completely voluntarily, the market rate world will displace this community completely.
Well, you mentioned plastic straw bans. Do you think that this is a move by Tallahassee to usurp local control over controversial issues like housing and the environment? I mean, is this a total trying to move power, your opinion?
I don't see it that way. I see a good intention where Tallahassee sees or hears from one side of an argument and feels they need to fix the problem. It's up to us to show them the other side of the argument in how well thought out the local government is doing this to make sure they don't try to intercede. That's the goal.
Well, I'm speaking with Miami City Commissioner Ken Russell, representing District 2. Russell spearheaded a plan last year to establish an affordable housing development and has been a key part of the city's master plan. It comes as lawmakers in Tallahassee push forward a bill that would prevent cities from doing just that. Commissioner, I want to transition now from housing development to a different type of building. You're all too familiar with the controversy facing the future of the Coconut Grove Playhouse. A special emergency City of Miami Commission meeting is set for next week to discuss the future plans for the building. Briefly remind us, what's the county's proposed plan? They want to demolish a portion of the building and renovate the other part, right?
Sure. And historic preservation is a little further down the list than housing in terms of a crisis within the city. But from a cultural perspective, historic preservation perspective, this playhouse issue has brought more drama to the city of Miami than you'd have ever seen on that stage. People are very, very passionate about this issue in Coconut Grove. And if you're familiar with it, at the corner of Main Highway and historic Charles Avenue in the West Grove stands the Coconut Grove Playhouse. It's currently blue. It used to be sort of a sienna color when it was built almost 100 years ago. Has a very dramatic facade with a lot of fenestration. It's very beautiful, but it's been left unattended for a long time, many years, and it's really in bad shape. The state owns it. It's been leased to the county, and the county has developed a plan to redevelop it. Now there are two sides to this argument in this preservation world. My role in this as a city commissioner, this is being brought to me in a quasi-judicial fashion. There's a lot of things that I can work on just purely political and what I believe, but in this particular case, I have to stick to the facts of what's being presented in this appeal, and it's the county appealing the decision of the Miami's Historic Board, which said, of your plan, they don't approve of certain parts of the plan, which include demolition of the actual theater structure itself.
And just for our listeners, you know, there is one camp of people on this issue that want the entire playhouse preserved. And then the county's plan, it would include partial restoration, but partial demolition and rebuilding, including a parking garage. I'm curious, do we know what the estimated cost and timeline of the project would be if it does get approved?
Either plan is in the tens of millions of dollars. The full preservation idea would cost more, probably. But honestly, even though there's two plans out there, my job in this role is to simply weigh in on what the county has presented and decide, along with my fellow commissioners, whether or not it meets historic standards for the city of Miami and the designation there. And it's also on the National Register of Historic Sites. But the important thing to note here, because there's a lot of confusion out there, and there's even been polls run that say nearly everybody, you know, wants the restoration or the county plan. What everybody wants is to see theater come back. And there's a common thread therein. Everyone wants us to do something. People are tired of seeing it sit there rotting away when it's such an iconic and historic building to the Grove. But for either side to not recognize that the other side has valid points and a plan that is possibly viable is irresponsible. I really think there are... I'm running for re-election and knocking on thousands of doors, and I'm telling you, this community is very split over these plans.
I'm curious, how do you respond to criticism from some Coconut Grove residents that the county has not adequately considered other options, like renovating the entire building?
They say that they have and that it's not viable. So what you get into is a battle of the experts as to whether the building can be brought back, what the appropriate way is. But what we need to find is where we agree. One is to bring it back in some sense or another. There's total agreement in that. We don't want to see it turn into a mall or be sold off for development or whatever. Everyone agrees that the entire front building should be saved. Everyone agrees that the garage should happen. The Coconut Grove business area, the restaurants, the shops, they need parking so badly. This garage, is a crucial part of the plan. The only place they disagree on is whether or not to demolish or preserve the shell of the theater.
And I'm just going to remind our listeners that the special Miami City Commission meeting is set for next week. It's on Wednesday, May 8th at Miami City Hall. We'll have more details if people want to attend on our social media, WLRN Sundial. I want to move over to one last story with you, Commissioner. Folks who've driven through downtown Miami have seen them all over. The electric rental scooters are back. The pilot program was launched last fall, but folks haven't seen the scooters in full swing until the start of April. Can we remind folks about the controversy that the scooters initially faced, and they were here and then they weren't and now they're back?
Sure. You're hitting all my favorites: historic preservation, housing, and transit. So scooters are actually, we've seen them now in District 2 only. So if you're a City of Miami resident, you've only seen them in District 2 because it's been an approved pilot program in the district that I serve. And basically, six companies have come forward. Each of them have paid a $50,000 licensing fee to the City of Miami to start the program. And they're also paying a fee per day per scooter on the road. And then we've regulated them very heavily in unique ways that have never been done anywhere else in the country to really ensure the best quality of life experience, safety experience for everybody. Because these are VC companies, venture capital companies, really more than solving transit. They're out there to really get market share. So if left to their own devices, you'd see a million of these everywhere, and other cities have had nightmares. So far, so good.
Well, I'm curious, how did you determine which companies were able to get into the marketplace, but who, more importantly, who was kept out?
So for me, it's very important that we don't pick winners and losers, especially in an entrepreneurial startup sort of scene. I really want to see what's out there. And we engineered this in a way that the companies with the best app, the best product, and are going to succeed over the others. So the bar we set initially was that $50,000 licensing fee already says you've got to be serious about this. You're not just, you know, buying a couple scooters and throwing them out there. But we also had a lot of technological requirements. They needed to be able to do geofencing so we could see where they were and throughout, and they had to stay in the district. We had to be able to monitor them as a city and do all these things. So that sort of weeded out a few companies as well. The six we ended up with, as the program goes along, the ones that can prove usage every month get to increase their fleet incrementally. Those who have poor usage have to decrease their fleet. And by the end of the program, the best companies and best product will win out, I'd say.
My last question for you on this is safety. I think a lot of people see these scooters, they go pretty fast, and they see scooters, cars, and a lot of people wonder, where does the liability fall if and when there's an accident?
Sure. We have a very strong indemnity program with the scooter companies. But safety is a major concern. I've worked together with the police chief on this, with the Miami Parking Authority, with our city administration to make sure that we're doing everything we can to make this a safe rollout. And thank God there's not been any major incidents so far.
But that liability falls on the user of
so,
the scooter?
Yes. So it's on the user and it's on the scooter company. The city of Miami is not liable for someone who this is you want to treat this the same way as you would a cyclist. They're out there on their own accord. If something's wrong with the product or something and they get hurt, there's an issue there. But they're allowed to be in the bike lanes. They're allowed to carefully be on the sidewalks, and we have them regulated for speed. So hopefully everyone stays safe and wears a helmet.
Thank you for joining us, Commissioner.
I really appreciate it. Thank you for covering it.
I've been speaking with City Commissioner Ken Russell, representing District 2 in Miami, and you can find more info about these electric scooters, the Coconut Grove Playhouse, and affordable housing in the 305 by going to our social media, WLRN Sundial. Still to come, there's new research on the growing Hispanic vote in Florida. We've got a panel discussion on the role it could play in the 2020 elections.